you wanted to talk about?
Welcome to the Reflex Blue Show. I'm your host, Donovan Beery. James, we never really know what we're going to talk about around here. So,
it's my kind of game.
Yeah, we have with us James Victori. You're still in New York, right?
Yeah, Brooklyn.
Yeah, and we were just talking. You're like moving studios, which is starting to make me. I mean, I moved houses from Midtown Omaha to suburb Omaha earlier last year, and we were there like 16 years. So how long have you been in? And so I mean, that was I don't want to move again. How long have you been in your current studio?
Yeah, moving really takes the fun out of moving. We've been here for 12 years.
Okay.
It's just basically a big, a big Brooklyn loft. So it's a live work, but it's everything. We're not even taking everything. We're dumping a lot of stuff, but it's just crazy, man. I am extremely unhappy this week.
Oh, so like we caught you like mid move. So are you still living there? Are you still working there? Or is it just a giant pile of boxes?
It's a giant pile of boxes, and I'm working in the middle of it. And it's the stuff, like for example, kitchen stuff. It's like freaking fishes and loaves. Every time I put a bunch of stuff in a box, it just seems like there's just more stuff to be put in another box. It's crazy. And I'm trying to keep my head about me, and I gotta disassemble a lot of stuff. And it's been kind of crazy. And then dealing with movers, so I'm just trying to keep my wits about me and keep moving, baby.
See, I had the advantage of when I moved, I could come into the office the next day, and it didn't matter that the home was unpacked because I couldn't see it. I could show up and work was normal. Or when I've moved offices, it was the opposite. I could go home, but you're like living and working, so it's like just constant chaos, I assume.
It's chaos, and you know what? It really affects your attitude. You forget what's so how pleasant it is to have a nest to come home to, and a place where you can sit and just go, And here it's just like, wow, there's that to do, and there's that to do, and. And I built in a lot of the cabinetry and stuff, so I have got to take that out with me. So it's crazy.
Oh, now you guys are just moving to a different place in Brooklyn, or are you like heading completely off the ranch?
We're heading to the ranch, brother. To the ranch.
What?
To Texas.
Oh, wow. So it's not even like, so when you're talking moving companies, like when I moved across town, we showed up. We moved over a weekend. We took multiple trips to make sure we didn't miss anything. But you are like headed off.
Yeah, it's the BM. It's right. The big move. And so we're trading a 1,000 square foot loft to 49 acres.
Wow, that is quite the change. So there won't be an issue of finding space per se.
Oh no, there would be an issue of like how to use up some space. We're gonna probably get some teepees out there and do some workshops or things like that. I'm looking forward to it. I just got to get there right now.
I mean, you've been known as like a staple of like the New York design scene for a while. What made you decide to move? Was it you talked to Armin Vitt and he said, "Hey, come to Texas"? Did he lure you over there?
That certainly wouldn't do it. Baby.
Oh yes.
We got a new baby, and my in-laws are outside of Austin, and we're going to we're choosing life. So we're going to head off to Austin. We're going to be about 30-35 minutes away from my in-laws, and in another direction, 30-35 minutes away from Austin. So we're not even in town.
Oh well, I assume. I mean, having 49 acres in the middle of any town's a little insane.
Yeah.
No, that's great.
Church.
That's great. So, what kind of issues is this taken? Have you like alerted your clients, or do you not even care? Like you're kind of moving your whole practice as well as your life.
Yeah, yeah. Clients. One, they don't care. I haven't had anybody buy in the studio in I don't know how long. And also, client work is actually a small portion of our income. So we're making room for the other stuff that we really dig doing. You know, like the workshops I'm doing, filming, and all the stuff where we really get to interact with real designers instead of just kind of doing the work. I like doing the work, but I'm getting a reputation more as a teacher, and I want to play that up a lot more.
Yeah, and I think last time we had you on the show, it was just before you were launching the Take This Job or Shove It conference, and I think that might have been your first solo conference you did, probably 3.5 years ago.
Yeah, Take This Job and Love It, actually.
That's, there you go.
But, yeah, and we're trying to figure out how to, you know, those have been really popular. The dinner series has been really popular, and we're just trying to figure out how to do it in a more rural setting.
Well, I mean, the teepees is a great thing. You can tell people you can come out here. You don't even have to get a hotel room. You can just sleep on the ground. Hopefully a rattlesnake won't bite you.
Yeah, exactly. Pee outside.
Right.
The glories of nature, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I think, like, the HOW conference and the AIJ conference miss is there's no, like, outdoor urinals.
Unless you have a balcony.
that's a different... Those stories we don't like to repeat out loud on the show, so.
You can count on me for that.
Yeah.
We're off to bigger and better. It's good.
And the other thing is you've been having, I've seen on your, you know, following you on the social medias, you've been having some amazing, like, designer garage sales where people were, like, emailing, like, how do I get to New York to buy your stuff?
Yep. Yeah, that was part of the offloading. And I realized that... I've been kind of shrewd with my work over the years, my archives are vast and deep, and I'm happy to get to unload it. And I really don't have the wherewithal or the setup to sell the original stuff. You know, besides the prints that are on that you can get online. But I have, you know, a lot of original work, and I'm basically like what they call a creative professional, Donovan.
So, yeah,
like. Creatively, I'm a monster. Creatively, I'm the Hulk. I can do anything. I can work in ceramic. I can make books. I can make posters. I make a lot of stuff. The professional side of me is a little bit like the gecko lizard. You know, it's like I got a wimpy teeny little arm hanging off of this Hulk of a body. And so I'm really good at making stuff, and I'm not as good at getting it out the door. Or having exhibitions, or having sales, or that kind of stuff. So I'm more than happy. We'll probably have a sale when we get to the other end too, a sale in Texas.
Oh, when you start unloading the boxes and you realize, why did I pack this?
No, when I start unloading the boxes and I realize, oh my gosh, I still have so much stuff in them, and I really like my work, and I like that other people like it, and I want to make it accessible to them.
No, that's great. And people can still buy this stuff online? Like, yeah. other than like having to hunt you down at your house, they can like find a place online to buy some of the stuff?
Yeah, there's on jvictoria.com, there's a shop site. Those are not originals. Those are prints. Those are reissues that we have. But I have all the original stuff from years of collecting work. I have other people's work. I've got my work. It's kind of overwhelming after a while. And too many books, you know, that you don't touch.
Right. No, I understand that.
You know, I mean, you know, we moved here and I've got bookshelves that we basically took books out of boxes 12 years ago and put them up on the shelves, and they sat on the shelves 12 years, and then you're going to put them back in a box. You know, it kind of don't make sense.
Nope, I fully understand. Well, hey, we're going to be right back with James Victoria, and we'll talk about what you're up to next. Okay, and we're back. The first thing I want to ask is you are one of the speakers again. They're bringing you back to the HOW conference in Atlanta.
Yep.
What's the talk about here? Is that coming up in like May? What's this talk going to be different, or is it going to once again show you like taking shotguns to some plates and stuff?
No, this talk is different. It's an idea that I've been toying with for the last couple of years and been working with, and it's called The Things That Made You Weird As a Kid Make You Great Today. And it's about just the idea that, like, everybody is born, you know. First of all, I believe that everybody is wildly creative. Like, there's some guys who I hang out with at the bar who are like city workers, you know?
Sure.
They are funny. They are funny and quick and smart. They would make amazing designers or amazing artists, but you know, they never thought they could. So they, you know, they're working for the state, you know, working for the city. You know, I believe everybody's wildly creative, and it's just about kind of figuring out how to channel that, you know, into your work. And I think also that everybody's kind of born with a certain fire inside of them, and it's my job to kind of coax that fire into a larger flame. So, because the idea, like I said, is the things that made you weird as a kid make you great today.
No, and that's, I've seen that with artists, is they, when you read like things about musicians or famous like fine artists and stuff, they weren't necessarily like uber popular and great as kids. They were kind of weird and odd.
Yeah, they were goofy. Yeah, and you know, and what happens is that stuff gets taught out of us, or we give it away because we're embarrassed, or it gets shamed out of us. You know, these are things that I experienced in my life, and only when I started kind of taking advantage of them and putting them in my life and putting them in my work, you know, was I, you know, one, just more comfortable with myself, because I wasn't living a lie, and two, I realized people were responding to it professionally. Which is really awesome.
So now you just have a new kid. I've got like a 3-year-old now. What do we do so that our children don't get taught the crazy and the weird and the odd out of them?
You know, it's so hard to do though. It's so hard to do as parents because they go off and do weird stuff, and you're like, oh, you know. Listen to this, Donovan. I had this assistant for a year. She was amazing. This was a couple of years ago, and she told me the story. When she was a kid, she loved to draw, right?
Which is also very common in this field.
Yeah. She loved to draw, and she wanted to show her parents how much she loved them. So she took out her crayons, and she made what she felt was the best picture of her mother and her father that she could think of. She drew it on the wall of her bedroom.
Right.
And her parents came in and saw that and freaked out. Right? Because like, oh my God, you're drawing on the wall. Let's get the soap. Let's get the sponges. Let's clean this off. Right?
Right.
They just crushed her heart. Crushed her creativity, right? I mean, it takes forever to get over that. I mean, even when she was working with me, she was technically talented, but she was so afraid of making a mistake, or so afraid of adding to the conversation something funny or goofy. It took me a year working with her to try to get her to kind of own up to some level of creative courage, you know? And I think this happens across the board. I can see it when I was a kid, you know, how, you know, I won't go into the whiny specifics here, but how.
But we've already talked about the balconies.
You know, it wasn't fostered. It wasn't condoned in my household. And as parents, I think it's really hard to kind of, and you don't have to necessarily coax it, but you have to let it be. You know, like I don't think it's your job to help your kid along. I think it's your job to just introduce a lot of different things and let them find something on their own.
I could see that. So it's not necessarily encouraging something. It's not discouraging everything.
Yeah. Even especially the really kind of, quite frankly, annoying parts, you know, like the little chatterbox or the, you know, sing-song everything making up wordplay and all, you know, this kind of thing that children are naturally do. But these are the things that, you know, if we take responsibility for them, these are our gifts. These are our strengths. These are our superpowers.
No, I think that's great. And I always tell people that one of the things I've learned, you know, is that you have to show the work you want to do to get the work you want to do. And sometimes it's showing that weird stuff.
True.
Because no one will come up with it if you don't, and no one will ever think to have you do it if you don't say like, hey, this is stuff I like doing. It may be a little weird, but I like it. And yeah, there may be others that do too.
And on top of it, you know, when you become professional, you know, a professional artist, professional designer, the other thing is like, you know, you can't just be that weird person. You have to put it in the work. And that means every day. That means doing the work, you know? So most people think that they have to be wildly creative and whip smart. And quite frankly, it's just really not true. There are so many projects out there that I don't necessarily condone, you know, going concerns that I see in the design world that I don't think are up to par or as smart or funny as I wish they were or whatever. But you know what? The people are just doing the work. They're humping. They're making it happen. And they're, ergo, they become, you know, professional. They start getting paid for it. So it's just about doing the work. You could sell racism. And if you do the work and you hump, you know what? You're going to find your audience.
Hey, ask Donald Trump, man.
You're going to find your audience and they will pay you. You know, it's crazy. So a lot of us, you know, we look at these little – I've been on stage enough times where I was on stage with a guy who is just a king. I won't tell you who he is, but he's just a king. And he's got an Emmy Award-winning animated film, and he designs restaurants, and he's designed Olympic logos. I mean, the guy's amazing. And he was on the – he was behind the scene before he went on, hurling, sweating. Oh. It looked like hell. And I'm like, dude, what's are you sick? And he looks at me and he says, James, I just do these little things. Meaning I just make these drawings. He couldn't fathom that people would even like them. You know, and that's the thing. You can't even judge yourself whether people are going to like them or not. You just got to do them. You got to do them, and you got to bravely get it out in the world. It's crazy because we look at our little gifts, and you're like, oh, well, you know, that's just something I did as a kid. I've always drawn. It's okay. You don't have to like it.
Right.
You know, I mean, how many times have you heard someone, you know, present work that way?
Yeah, all too much. More than it needs to be, because even when I have people in here like interns or whatever, and they present work, it's like you have to sell it to me. Like I can't sell it to the client if you don't sell it to me. You have to actually believe that what you're doing is good.
Yeah. But at least don't poop on it in front of people. It's like someone giving you a compliment and they turn it down. It's like, ow, dude. Learn to take a compliment.
Right. No, that's great. All right, we're going to be back in 1 minute with James Victorian. When we have like job shadows, students come by here, and if they ever ask me like, "What do I need to do?" One of the things I always tell them is follow James Victorian's burning questions. Go on YouTube, follow him, because I think I tell them you give what I think is the most honest advice and a lot of rationale behind it. It may not be the best, it may not be the worst advice, but it's honest, and you give reasoning behind it. So if they don't agree with it, they at least know where you're coming from. But I think I agree with way more of it than I don't. So I think it's great stuff.
That's awesome. I appreciate that. Yeah, we've been doing burning questions for a couple of years, and it's a going concern. It's something I want to keep building on, and it's something I want to. And that's a part of the move to Texas too. Is, you know, I can set up a studio for that where I can really pay attention to it, because I haven't been able to really do the work as well as I want to. You know, for technical reasons, for time limitations, for this and that. But I've realized that the audience is so completely worthy and very hungry, and I want to serve them as best I can.
No, and it's nice. I mean, so you get the people send you the questions, and then you answer them, and they're between like 5-10 minutes long answers. Mm-hmm. About just a simple question. So it's not only they're good answers, but they're thorough answers.
Yeah, it was funny because I had a guy, we answered one, we filmed one just before I got on this thing with you, and the guy is 43 years old and a recovered alcoholic, and he's hacking away at online courses, right? And he's looking for some guidance, some mentorship. it was funny because I had to bring up the, you know, it brings up, you know, the whole online teaching thing. And like, you know, Donovan, you know as well as I do, teaching is a conversation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Teaching, you bring me a piece of work, and people are like, hey, would you crit my work? I'm like, do we have 3 hours? Because that's what it's going to take.
Yeah.
It's going to be a conversation. I'm going to ask you, you know, like, you know, my students always knew when I taught at SVA, my students always knew that, you know, when we started a crit, the best thing that they could say would be, I'd say, okay, you know, Donovan, tell me about this. And you'd say, James, when I was a kid, my father took me to the beach every summer, and we would collect rocks and blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, oh, my God, that is so amazing. That's now tell me, you know, like, because one, again, it's like something that you did that was weird when you were a kid and you're applying it to your work. But also it's honest. And it's something that it's like it's in the particularized universal, meaning you're saying something that's very particular, but other people will go, oh, my God, I remember going to the beach and, yeah, we did that same thing and – you know,
right?
And so I had to tell this guy, listen, you know, no, the online education is rough because there's no conversation, and there's really not any crits that are really worthwhile, because you can't. Even if someone took a class of mine online, you know, if they write to me, I can't give them that kind of. You know, we can't have that kind of conversation.
No, I mean, the online is great if you need a. This is how you do something step by step. Like, this is how you do these functions. Online's great because you can do it on your own. You can,
yeah,
you can
1, 2, 3 steps. Yeah.
Yeah. But you're right. Like I've taught classes. I've taught night classes at the local colleges here, but I've never done an online one because I was always like, I don't want to just record something and then like not have any interaction with the student. Like that's not what I wanted to do.
Yeah, I've realized the last couple of years that it's really difficult, and you know, I feel responsible for you know the things that I put out, but yet I can't help even with burning questions. Like the thing about burning questions is there's actually a number of people out literally around the world who are have become mentees of mine because they follow up after they like write me and thank me, like, and I've literally had people like quit their job after watching the burning question.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then you know, there was this one cat, he's totally amazing, and he's in Texas, so I'm gonna be seeing him soon. So he wrote me and he says he quit his job. And I was like, oh my God. So I wrote him back and I was like, okay, well, here's the things you have to do. Make sure you do this, make sure you do this. And then I was speaking in Texas literally 3 months later, and I wrote to the guy and said, hey, listen, I'm gonna be in Austin. I'll comp you for this this event because I'd love to, you know, meet you and shake your hands. So he comes to the event, and we're chatting after. And he said, "You know what?" He says, "I said, well, you know, what's it like being unemployed?" He's like, "Dude, I was unemployed for like a week and a half. I literally quit my job, and once I quit my job, the studio that I really wanted to work for called me and said they had a position for me." I'm like, "Well, that's how it works." You have to put yourself out into the universe. You have to take these huge leaps of faith in order to, you know, in order to get somewhere. And most people are like, well, I'm going to suck at this job for 5 years until I make enough money. Then I'll be happy, you know? Or when I get my car paid off, then I'll be happy. And they don't realize that, you know, the now is so important. The now is important. And trusting the universe and taking chances, you know, people respect that.
I know it's hard to make big moves like that, but I've also learned that no one's going to make them for you.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's crazy because, like, when I was working my way up, you know, teenager into my 20s and even to the 30s, like, I look back and I realize I was a boob because the only big leaps I ever made was when I was thrown out of the nest.
Right.
You know? I should have taken advantage of things much sooner.
No, I get it. So now you've actually taken. We were talking a little bit off mic here. You actually have taken a big leap and kind of leaving a lot of the studio work. You're still doing that, obviously, but you're moving into kind of a teacher writing role.
Yeah, no, I'm still doing. I'm still working for groovy, sexy clients who have lots of money. We like doing that.
Especially ones that have like magazine covers that get you a lot of publicity, I assume.
Well, the magazine covers don't have a lot of money, but yeah, those are groovy, sexy that's groovy, sexy work. Yeah, we've got a client. We've got a new client that we've been working with the last couple of months, and I love them completely. And I'm trying to take good care of them. And we started working for Entrepreneur Magazine. They got a hothead creative director, a guy named Brandon Cavula, who's been really awesome, and he's gotten me involved in redoing the masthead and redoing some work inside.
Yeah, I saw that. You got the giant. I mean, you can tell it's got a big Victoria stamp right on the cover, and then yeah. you're getting like the back page inside, like primo real estate in there too, yeah. to kind of do what you want.
What happened is, you know, the folks from Entrepreneur started looking around once my name started, you know, being thrown around. They started looking around at what I was doing for social media and burning questions and stuff. And they said, hey, what would happen if we gave this guy the back cover, you know, the last page of the magazine every month? So basically, I am writing and illustrating the back page of Entrepreneur Magazine, and it's called Resolutely Difficult Advice. And it's been a blast, and entrepreneurs and social media has been picking it up, and people are like photographing the page and sending it out. You know, the first one was called Just Start, you know, because that's the way, you know, it's like we were talking about before about, you know, taking leaps of faith. That's about, you know, just start. And I'm working on one right now that would be the, I think the April issue, and it's all about failure. And about how I don't even believe in failure. The only failure is if you don't start. That's the failure.
Okay. So what's kind of the advice behind that? Is it that failure is what leads you to find the right solution, or is it that?
Yeah, no, I think. But one of the things, you know, these are only, you know, less than 500 words, so it's really hard to kind of. I mean, you could write a book about failure, obviously, but I think that word strikes fear into people. Where they everything they do in life is based on failure, and that's like really not the right way to think. I really don't believe there is any failure unless you are, you know, accidentally hit by a train. That would be pretty much failure. You know, there's no failure. There's just like lack of momentum. Most people willingly, especially because I have conversations with people for questions, willingly admit that they're not putting in the work, and so that's would be failure. You know, wasting time is your only sin.
Okay. No, I fully see where you're coming from.
You know, I had this old boss mentor a bunch of years ago. His name was Paul Bacon, and he used to say, you know, whenever shit hit the fan, he used to say, well, sometimes you win, sometimes you learn. You know, it's like, you know, you only fail when you stop taking shots. That's it. You got to keep taking shots.
And you obviously follow your own advice. You're packing up from Brooklyn. You're moving to a ranch in the middle of Texas.
Yeah.
So even now, James Vittori's taking big chances, and we love it. We love it.
No, James Vittori's taking big chances all the time, and I'm you know, I'm trying to live out, you know, everything that we teach, because basically, when you teach this stuff, you just get better at it. So I'm just trying to get better.
Yeah, I will say I learned as much from teaching, I think, as my students hopefully learned from me.
Yeah, they say if teaching, if it's done well, it's a very selfish occupation.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. James, I really appreciate your time, and I look forward to seeing you here in Austin, or no, Atlanta, as it would be.
It's gonna be Austin.
Atlanta.
It's gonna be Austin in Atlanta.
Yeah, so you drive in there? Is that close enough? Or I guess Texas is like 10 hours from everywhere, just because of the size of the state. So
yeah, and Donovan, so I'm going to be packing up a big moving rig from the, you know, to and somebody's going to be driving all my crap out there, and then I'm getting in my pickup truck and I'm going to drive to Texas. It's going to be so sweet.
All right. Well, if you by chance come through Omaha, say hi. But it's probably not on the way, so we understand it.
Hey, Donovan, it's been great speaking to you.
All right, thanks, James.
Adios, man.
Bye.
The Reflex Blue Show with Donovan Beery is hosted at 36point.com. Music by Dustlab. Find out more at myspace.com/dustlab.